Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dogfight, your original podcast covering the 10-0, fifth-ranked Pac-12 leading Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Law Dog Mitch on unpaid leave. He's getting ready for his big trip down to Corvallis. The Dogs fresh off a gritty 35-28 win over the two-time defending conference champion Utah Utes. We're going to dissect that Utah game a bit and prep for the big one this Saturday against the favored 8-2 Oregon State Beavers, 4:30 in Reese and Burrito Stadium. Law Dog, buckled up, buddy. You ready to go?
Oh, boy.
Okay, here we go. Hey, us versus us, man. The Dogs came in the 9-point favorite, and we're a blocked field goal away from covering, actually. There was a boneheaded play we got to talk about. There was a safety, Rome going full-blown, Biletnikoff. Let's get into UW and Utah for the last time in a long time.
For the last time in a long time, all right. These teams traded three and outs to start the game. The Husky defense forces another punt just 5 minutes into the game with two stops here. This time they get a nice run from Tybo Rogers, and then there's that pass interference on Rome in the end zone. Penix punches it in for the sneak, for the touchdown, make it 7-0 Huskies. Utah comes right back. It's that huge 41-yard gainer to Devon Vele. Jaquindon Jack punches it in for Utes, touchdown to tie it at 7. And then 19 seconds left in the first quarter, Grady Gross tacks on a 41-yard field goal. It's a pretty windy conditions, but knocks it in to make it 10-7 Washington. Utah coming back here running 12 plays for 75 yards, including three short third down conversions. Huskies can't get off the field. Barnes throws for his first touchdown of the game and gives the Utes their first lead at 14-10. But Penix comes right back with 7 minutes left in the first half, goes deep to Rome Odunze for the 34-yard touchdown. That was one of those beauties you were talking about, make it 17-14 Washington now. Now, the Huskies have given up two touchdowns here, but they had also gotten two stops, and they were getting the ball to start the second half. But the defense just coming unraveled here at the end of the first half. Barnes finds Sione Fuki for a 51-yard touchdown on just their second play of the drive. They get back on top 21-17. The Huskies do come back at that huge pass interference penalty on Rome. They were all over him all day long. Keeps their drive alive on a 3rd and 10. Gets that call. Dylan Johnson's able to punch in for the touchdown, 24-21 Washington. But Bryson Barnes, not ready to concede the Heisman Trophy race here in the first half. He finds Devon Bailey again for 68 yards. Another long one, switching the field. Jackson punches it in. That would actually be Utah's final score of the day. It's 28-24 Utes at half, but it did not feel good right at this moment.
No, sure didn't.
Huskies go 4-0 to start the second half. And the defense, though, they step up, right, in the second half, really clamping down the Utes, forcing a 3-and-out to start the second half. Huskies are able to tack on another field goal. It's a little unsatisfying, but made it 28-27. And then the defense gets another stop with 3-and-out. This time the Huskies finally get the lead back. This was the really pretty one, 33-yarder from Penix to Rome, making it 33-28 Washington. Obviously, the play of the game here, not for all the right reasons. Utah driving down to reclaim third quarter from the Husky 24-yard line. Barnes throws into traffic, and Afonso Tuvitala comes up with the interception. I have to admit, BT, I was so busy celebrating here, I didn't even see him drop the ball. But then on the replay, it looks maybe it's the 2.5-yard line.
So it wasn't even close. Yeah, not even close.
Utah falls on it on the 1. The pick 6 turns into a loss of 75. And then on the very next play, this kind of is the game saver and maybe the season saver, right? Bruner and was it Latuli Gassanoa getting in the
big?
Yeah.
Bruner was a freaking machine all day.
They get the safety to make it 35-28 and now getting the ball back. And it looked like maybe things were okay, but though there's still a quarter to play, Huskies are looking to put it away, but then they end up in a critical 4th and 5 from midfield. I thought the ghost of Dan Lanning was going to rise up and bite us here. But then there's an inexplicable holding call on Dylan Johnson, who literally could not have been lined up any further from the action. and right in front of the side judge, the Huskies have to punt. They get the holding call. The crowd was feeling it, though. They're helping out the defense. They force another three and out, forcing the Utes to punt it back with 8.5 minutes to go. And this is the moment when I was like, this Utah team is not going to go away quietly into the night. The two-time defending champs, they are right trying to stay alive in this Pac-12 race. They get the crucial block, miss, muff, whatever you want to call it, field goal after the bad snap. And
that's not bad laces, yeah.
They have life with a minute 38 left, but Bryson Barnes, maybe a pig farmer, BT, but he got slaughtered by the Hogs on this one.
No!
10 from his own 18. He throws up a wounded sausage patty to Dom Hampton, who got burned earlier in the game on the long one. This time he comes down with the football. Washington wins it 35-28, and oh boy, it was not easy.
It wasn't easy. A nice, gritty win from a team who, again, I can't think of a team who has done so well in this conference. Back-to-back conference champions. They've played in five of the last six Pac-12 championships, and one that, frankly, we have really dominated statistically.
You know, yeah.
7-2 over the last 9 years, 9-2 over the lifetime. And, you know, again, kudos and tip of my cap to the Utah fans who are around us, who are always just, you know, just class acts. All that. Hey, BYU fans, you're full of it. I don't believe anything you say. These guys are class acts. I freaking love the Utah fans. But, you know, let's get into this game a little bit.
Before we put them in the ground here, they were a great addition to the Pac-12. Oh. They really were the team of the South over the entire Pac-12 era. We thought it would be USC kind of running away with those South American titles. But just like what you said, Utah really like came in to the conference, held their own for a while, but then really started to take off here in the latter half of this last decade. And they, you know, I think they're going to be in great shape in the Big 12.
I think they will. I mean, like, who else has been in five of the last six of their conference champions? I mean, look at who are we talking about there? You know, I mean, Georgia, Bama, who are we talking about that's done this? Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Look at the defense here. Carson Bruner, I said, what a freaking machine on special teams. He was absolutely crushing people. And on that safety, love to see Antuli back. 30 snaps, but he was huge on that safety as well. Braylon Trice to me was probably the most disruptive. He played the whole damn game, every snap. Another new guy out there, Jacob Lane. Mm-hmm. Real solid pressure out there. Only 8 snaps or so, but when he was in there, I mean, he was absolute force. And so that's maybe a nice thing from the freshman. The corners, okay. So Nunley played 46 snaps and was a machine. I'm so glad the hashtag forgive Nunley, whatever happened, worked. Elijah Jackson, he played the whole game, but he was getting picked on, buddy. He really was, and missed a few. Meesh had a really bad PI on that opening drive. Seeing a lot less Mikel Esteem, which I think is an okay thing. Seeing Camp Fab come out so early, that worries me. But again, this secondary that we'll talk about Oregon State a little bit and the ability to pick on it. They have 3 good receivers we should be worried about. This is something to think about here. Tackling wasn't pretty. And the worst defenders today were Meesh. And I hate to say it, but Fatui Tui Tele missed a few. And I wanted to be a little bit better on that. You missed a few tackles I don't think he should have. And some defensive penalties that we have to clean up. Real quick on the offense, I'll just say, I don't know if we've ever made so much about, as a wide receiver, ever, we've talked about so much who played 6 snaps and had no targets, but J-Mac, he's out there, right? And the one on the offensive line, again, our starting 5 played every single snap. 11 Penix. Loved Roger Rogergaard shutting down the Utah sack machine.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No pressures, no sacks. Great play by Rosengarten.
No, Rosengarten has been excellent for 2 seasons. I think he doesn't get anywhere near the credit he deserves. Like, he is criminally underrated. But then just to add to that, they're really just tightening up this rotation, right? They spent the first 4 games, everybody was playing. Then it was kind of like injuries kind of forced their hand in the next few games. But now, I mean, as you're getting people back, you know, you're really seeing them tighten up those rotations. And I think I have to say, the Husky performance in the fourth quarter this season and even last season, maybe that's a result of these guys being a little bit fresher as you get down the stretch here, because they really seem like they're playing well in the fourth quarter, and they did again Saturday.
And look at the adjustments that were made. A lot has been talked about the Edifuano Lafocio speech. Something happened. There was just the teammate, but they came out and again shut Utah down of no scores at all. And the I think what did they pass for, like 18 yards or something in the second half? Just unreal. But a great gritty winner's win, and boy did they get this one done against a very very tough Utah team.
Yeah, the pick six would have been nice for a little bit of style points that we're kind of lacking. Right. We're going to get to that in a second. But winning this game by 11 or 12 would have made a big difference, I think. But, as it is, you look, if you just get through these next two, three games, it doesn't matter how you win them.
No, it sure doesn't. It sure doesn't. And look, and it's part of the reason why the offensive line, all five, are playing every single snap with Penix, is because they have to. We've been in each of these games down to the last possession, and so we've needed them there. But we'll see. Let's put this one to bed. And Utah, look, I hope I see you again in a bowl game at some point, or when we're in some super conference. Who knows? I don't know if it's going to be a home and home with these guys, but what a great fan base, and it was great to have them again for the last time. I'm real glad about the result. Let's turn the page, though. Like we should. This Saturday, 4:30 on ABC, we travel to Corvallis for the last time and maybe forever. It's UW at Oregon State. But before we get into the present, Professor Lawdog, take us in the old Husky hot tub time machine, buddy. Educate me on these Beavers. Let's hear about it.
Yeah, so this one, probably the most anticipated Oregon State-Washington game of all time, I have to say, right? But, think of the drama. Senior night in Corvallis, for one thing. The Beavers' last Pac-12 home game ever. Ranked in the top 10, or I guess they finished 11th in the rankings today, but they haven't been in the top 10 since 2012.
Undefeated at home.
And needing just two wins to punch their ticket to the conference championship game against UW, their hated rival, and then their biggest rival, Oregon. This one's a tough ticket. I looked a couple days ago, so this might be outdated, but $175 was just the get-in price at Research Stadium, BT. Wow. The Huskies lead this one all time. Four ties. And the first meeting was in 1897 when the Beavers won 16-0 in Corvallis. The Huskies held the early edge in those early years, winning 10 of 16 before World War I with three ties. But then, this kind of surprised me, from 1920 to 1974, this series was dead even, 22-22-1. But beginning in 1975, the Huskies have absolutely dominated this rivalry, winning 36 of the last 45 games, including 10 of the last 11. They played during COVID, and other than 1988 and 1990, the Huskies and Beavers have played every season, including that COVID season, going back to World War II. So this is one of those long time, long running rivalries that's going to go away here. But the last time this game had these kind of stakes, probably the year 2000. Beavers had just beaten USC, first time in 26 tries they had beat USC the week before. They jumped into the national rankings, but the Cardiac Kids won on a late field goal at Husky Stadium, 33-30, in a game that essentially paved their way to the Rose Bowl. When the Huskies won that game in 2000, BT, it was their 13th win over Oregon State in a row, and their 23rd win out of 24 games beginning in 1975. So that's the context of what that game was. I mean, we had just beaten them 23 out of 24 years ending on that day.
Was that in that 2000 team, Dennis Erickson coach, right?
Right. And
E.J. So, Houshmandzadeh,
Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco.
Chad Johnson.
Yeah.
So crazy. What a freak.
So I wanted to talk about the 23 out of 24, right? But what was the one that was in there? Well, let's go to the Wayback Machine, 1985, Husky Stadium. This is considered one of the greatest football upsets in college football history, BT. The Huskies are coming off an Orange Bowl victory, what should have been a national championship in 1984. They had dropped their first two games of that season, but they were still 4-2. And trying to stay in the hunt with the rankings. The Beavers, meanwhile, were coming out of, and you are going to hear this correctly, a five-year stretch where they won two conference games. They were literally a doormat of the Pac-10 at this time. They've been knocking off, they had knocked off Cal 4 weeks prior to this game for their third win in that time, but they entered the game at Husky Stadium having been shut out 2 weeks in a row, giving up 97 points to USC and Wazoo, and they were 38-point underdogs. They had not beaten the Huskies in over a decade. Just under 2 minutes to play in the fourth quarter, the Huskies had a 20-14 lead, but they were forced to punt from deep in their own territory. The Beavers go for the block, get the block punt, recover the ball in the end zone to take the lead 21-20 with just 1:29 left in the game, and they hold on to win, and it is still today considered one of the greatest upsets in college football history. Right up there with Center College's win over Harvard in 1921. Then, of course, the other one that beat this in terms of the bigger point spread was Jim Harbaugh's miraculous upset of Pete Carroll and USC in 2007. So there have been a couple bigger point spreads since this 1985 game, but it's still third highest point spread of all time that the underdog won. So when
I'm bringing up old shit, Law Dog. I was having a good
time. I know. I got another one for you, too. When Oregon State finally snapped that long streak in 2001, I was there as a UW student at the old Reser Stadium. It's been remodeled twice since this game. And the Beaver quarterback that day going for 317 yards and 2 touchdowns. The Beavers running for 5 more touchdowns, winning 49-21. That quarterback was none other than Jonathan Smith, the old ball on the home sideline in Corvallis Saturday night. All the makings of a classic BT. I cannot wait.
Oh, man. A lot of history that goes by the wayside. And there, you want to talk about a team that needs no motivation this week, as you talked about it. They're undefeated at home. They've got the new stadium. They feel slighted by Washington, especially, and by the rest of the conference, being a team without a home. They know if they win these next two, they're in the Pac-12 championship for the last time. They need absolutely nothing. I can't say anyone's doubting them because they're actually freaking favored. Hey, this is going to be something big. Look, I'm excited about this. And let me talk a little bit about, just get into the exodus in the game. This Beaver offense, they put up 38 a game. Very balanced attack, 246 passing yards, 196 rushing yards. They run the ball well. The O-line, they brought back 4 starters. Josh Gray, in my opinion, legit NFL talent at one of the tackle spots. And Tuilagi Sigiaga in the inside, also very solid, probably an NFL guy. And in fact, Sigiaga, PFF's number one graded offensive lineman. They were just named the Joe Moore Award semifinalists for the top 12 offensive lines in the country. They've only allowed 14 sacks. They're ninth in FBS rushing, 5.39 yards a carry. PFF has them as the number one graded run block in the country. The line is good. Okay. Let's talk about that quarterback, that Clemson transfer, DJ Uiagalelei. Accuracy is an issue for the man, 58% completion rate. He's got a really great receiving trio he's going out towards. Anthony Guild and Silas Bolden, 600 yards each. And the tight end, Jack Velling, is no joke at 400 receiving yards. You know, it's kind of interesting. I was like, coming in, I guess, you know, I thought DJ was more of a dual threat, but not really. He doesn't really use his legs that much. He hasn't run for more than 18 yards in the last 7 games. And the only big rushing performance was 61 yards in that loss to Wazoo. We'll get into. They do kind of a weird thing where they bring in Aiden Chiles in the third series of every freaking game, this freshman QB, but he's delivered 3 passing and 2 rushing TDs in the last 5 weeks. So when they bring this guy in, it works. It's a little weird, but something tells me that the Husky coaching staff is going to watch a little bit of that tape and have that thing figured out. You got to be prepared for the rushing attack. 6'2", 232-pounder Damian Martinez leads the Pac-12. He already has over 1,000 yards, 7 touchdowns, and get this, 6.6 yards an attempt. It's not just him. The number 12 rusher in the pack is his teammate, Deshaun Fenwick, 500 yards and 5.8 yards an attempt. So when he needs a break, get that 6'2", 222-pound bruiser in there. Again, these guys, this offense, you got to be ready for them. Particularly one that likes to keep the ball out of your hands and run, and set up the pass to that trio. Our defense is going to have to be ready. I talked a little bit about it. I'm glad that Fatui Tuitele is back in full. He's ready to go. Latuli Gasanoa, ready to go. Tuli is there. Love having him. Like the new edge rushers that we're bringing in. They're linebackers. I don't know what more we want to ask out of these guys. I mean, Eddie has been amazing. Carson Bruner's been coming on strong. Alfonso Tupatala is going to be playing with a chip on his shoulder. And look, we talk about that one bonehead play that he made, but other than that, he's playing great. The secondary concerns me a little bit, both from a tackling perspective and from a covering perspective and from the pass interference calls that they're getting. That worries me a little bit with this offense coming in. We're going to have to score to win.
Yeah, for sure. And defensively, you know, I was expecting when I kind of looked at this that they would be a little bit of a taking a step back from last year, but they're really not. 5.12 yards per play, 35th nationally. Last year they were at 5.18 and 333 yards per game allowed total defense. That led the conference last year. They have the same number this year, but they're actually fourth. And then 20.3 points per game allowed, 20.0 last year. So their defense is exactly in line where they were last year. Now, the one thing I will say is they're slipping a little bit in the secondary and the yards per attempt allowed and the yards per game allowed slipping a little bit from where they were last year. They had huge losses on defense there. But they are tied with UCLA for first in the conference in sacks. They're plus 10 on the turnover margin on the season, second in the conference. And you know, they're playing pretty good special teams as well. The Washington and Oregon State are actually the two best in the Pac-12 in kick return yardage allowed. They're a little bit weaker in the red zone. You know, there might be a little bit of noise in these numbers here, but they're giving up scores in 86% of trips to the red zone by their opponents. But they've only allowed their opponents 29 trips all season. So that's in the top 25 nationally. But when they get there, they're scoring 86% of the time. That's a 90th. Nationally. So the Huskies are going to need to, you know, finish drives and get sevens when they get down there, like you're saying, BT, to keep up with these guys. And then on the flip side, offensively, they're second in the nation in red zone scoring. So they're finishing their drives, 97% success rate, and their touchdown rate is third nationally at 81%. So, you know, this is a tough task. This is probably the best, other than Ducks, this is probably the best team that we've faced this season. And even though I will say, I just wanted to point out, they have, the results are a little bit, I would say, padded. They haven't played the Ducks or the Huskies yet, right? They miss USC. That was the preseason favorite in the conference. So, you know, in
terms of, let me double down on that. Cause here's some water on the Oregon State Beaver defense, the same as last year.
Let's do it.
Okay. If this is how they faced against the top eight offenses in the Pac-12, the top four they haven't played. You said Oregon, USC, UW, and they're number four. Number five, Cal, they gave up 40 points. Number six, Dona, they lost. Number seven, CU, they needed a fourth quarter comeback to win. And number eight, Wazoo, they lost. So that's how they fared against the top eight offenses in the Pac-12.
That's exactly where I was headed, right? Is that these guys have, I mean, the teams, the first three games on their schedule, or I should say three of the first four games on their schedule, San Diego State, I use the Sagarin rankings here. San Diego State, 112, UC Davis, 144th, and even Stanford, who they did beat last week pretty soundly, is 95th, right? Wazoo, Cal, San Jose State, that other opening non-conference game they had, those teams are all in the 50s. So against the top 50, they won a two-touchdown win over Utah, a 12-point win over UCLA, and then they lost to Arizona. So, yeah, I think they are a little bit I'm not going to say they're overrated, but they are a little bit untested, right? I mean, I don't think we can look at their schedule and say they've played an elite team. And I'd say you look at, you know, with the exception of possibly Utah, and their win against Utah – is certainly looking pretty good. But, I mean, you lost to the Cougs, Oregon State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're catching them at a tough time.
Yeah.
We're catching them when they're hitting on all cylinders. We're catching them when they play incredibly well at home. And I worry about the team formula of what they have from an offense perspective. You know, if they're able to get – if Damian Martinez averages 6.6 yards a carry and he gets as much volume as he's been getting all years, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. I mean, that's going to be up to the defense to slow that down and get the ball back into Mike Bennett's hands. But we'll see how this thing turns out. All up, they are a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, yikes. I mean, it opened at 2.5, Washington favored by 2.5. 5-point move in the line is not a small thing. That must have taken a lot of money coming in on the Beavs, getting some points there, and it's flipped all the way. I mean, I got to say, I'm getting the dogs and the points. I'm taking it. I think this team can outscore anybody. And give me the Huskies in 2.5 here, buddy.
I love it. I think that's great. I think Mitch has the other side of this. You know, this is a real tough one. I think this is going to come down if it was, you know, look, three or so. I don't know. I would still, boy, this is really tough. I think this is a 1-2, maybe 3-point game. That's what I think this thing turns out. I think it's going to be a real tight game. And because of that, I'm going to take the Huskies to win, and I'm going to take the Beavs to cover. Because if I'm given those three options, I think it's just as likely it's a 1-2, or 3-point game. Give me it, maybe being one, maybe being two. I think the Dogs win this thing, but I think it might be close. And then it comes down to just a 1 point, extra point, 2 point conversion. Huskies win. I love this. And the thing being, you come in as an underdog, you can finally shut up some of the national media that we'll get into a little bit about the, some of the CFP ranking. And maybe we should talk about that now. Maybe this is a good time for that and get into this. Because coming into this thing is that, like, what do we need to do here? What do we need to do? And is it travel, go on the road against a top 12 ranked team who's favored and get a win? What do we need to do? And I don't think it matters that much, because you keep winning out, nothing else matters. It will take care of itself. But what do you need to do? Should we talk about the CFP a little bit?
Yeah, let's go for it. I mean, the rankings have been coming out for a few weeks. Huskies have been fifth in every single ranking. And, you know, I think this is one of the weeks where we looked up and said, hey, they just had a nice win over Utah. That's their third win over the CFP top 25. Maybe they're going to bump ahead of Florida State, but it didn't happen with the rankings that were just released earlier tonight. And the Huskies are on the outside looking in, up at four undefeated teams right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so and Florida State, they're sort of pointing to their key win being against number 15 LSU. Their strength schedule is lower. The only other one they can sort of point to is Duke, I suppose. Jesus, in this year's Clemson team, like maybe. I think this is a little bit of a CYA move by the CFP. Of like, well, if we admit it at this point, then, you know, but look, they did it with Georgia and Ohio State, right? We did it with Georgia and Ohio State. Georgia gets that win against Ole Miss, and they put them ahead of Ohio State, who, like, Ohio State handled business as well. So what more do you want? This thing is a little silly.
So the rankings that came out tonight, Georgia opened at one for the first time since they began doing the rankings. Ohio State was two. They had been number one. Michigan's been steady at three. Florida State steady at four. Washington steady at five. Those are the five undefeated teams. Obviously, only the four will get in. And then right behind Washington is Oregon at 9-1, Texas at 9-1, Alabama at 9-1 is eighth. And I think all eight of those teams are pretty much realistically playing for the four spots in the playoff right now. And there's kind of scenarios where they will all be a factor, you know, that will come at Washington's expense in a lot of cases, unless Washington wins these next two games and then takes care of business the Pac-12 championship.
And it's more, like, what more do you want? So this week, Florida State hosts North Alabama at home.
Yeah, right? Before the Florida game, the following week at rivalry week. And that's what, you know, a lot of these Southern teams are doing. And I mean, frankly, I think that's an opportunity where if the Huskies were to win, I think that's going to be a sharp contrast. Here we are playing on the road at the team you've ranked 11th. And if we can come out of that game with a win, and Florida State's, even if they're playing, even if they're beating South Alabama 80-0, I think it's fair to look up and say, hey, there's one of these teams that's beating good teams. And then there's Florida State.
Right. And you're playing against a five and five, you know, and then next week going into like, what, a 5-5 Florida team. But look, this one, it's frustrating. I don't think it matters in the end of the day, because I think it's one of those things where, like, you have to win out. I think I still believe that a one loss Pac-12 championship or champion is going to find their way in, and that the Pac-12 champion loser is out. I just think that's the way this thing, whole thing is going to shake out. And it doesn't really matter in the end of the day.
A couple of dynamics at play. For one, Ohio State at two and Michigan at three will be playing each other in two.
Right.
So one of those is going to fall out, presumably, of the top four by losing. And then secondarily, will be left out of the Big Ten championship game, where they won't necessarily be able to make up ground. So that's one path in. Then you've also got Georgia and Alabama, you know, who are – looks like they're going to be squaring off in the SEC championship game again. And if that happens, then you're looking at, you know, if Georgia was able to win Alabama, you're going to put the end to their season in terms of the CFP. But if Alabama wins, that could cause big trouble, because I don't see the committee knocking Georgia out of the top four necessarily.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough decision for them, particularly if all the results kind of hold and the others continue to play on. They're going to have a hard thing. But I do think, at the end of the day, it's going to be, you know, chaos will ensue. There hasn't been as much this year as other years, for sure. You haven't had five undefeated teams in Week 10 for quite some time from Power Five.
The Huskies had the same problem in 2016 when they were last in this college football playoff conversation, right? They hadn't played as strong a schedule as they played this year, but there was a lot more chaos. And even when they lost to USC at the week they started at 9-0, Clemson, I think, and it was maybe Ohio State, but anyway, there were other losses that weekend that didn't shuffle the rankings too much, and the Huskies were able to recover from that loss just a few weeks later. And so at the time, it looked a lot more dire than it ended up being. I think in this situation, you know, you're right. We haven't had that upset Saturday in college football yet, but if it comes, then the Huskies better find a way to pull it out on that particular day, or they're going to get buried in these rankings.
And handle their business, and everything will be taken care of. And you've got, you know, two, potentially three, games coming up. And two of those three could be against top 12 teams to really show that they handle business. And this team, I really do believe, has that culture of us versus us. They're going to be ready to go. I'm excited for it. Hey, should we get into the last, the Pac-12 roundup?
Yeah.
Let's get into it. So we've made our picks for the first couple of games, but let's look at how we are. And before I go into these, Lada, give me an update on the standings here, because I think we're neck and neck.
Yeah, you and I were on a little bit of a hot streak there in weeks 10 and 11 and a half, I should say 9 and 10, and that really cooled off here in week 11. We all got Cal covering at home against Wazoo. I got Colorado. You got USC to cover against the Ducks. And other than that, it was pretty much a bloodbath. So I'm holding in there at 31. You've got 32. Mitch is at 26. There's only, I want to say, maybe about 17, 18 games to go here between the bowl games, the championship game, and then weeks 12 and 13. So there's not that much time to make up for Mitch, but you and I will be fighting out this one till the end.
That's right. Here we go. Hey, let's get into this. See how these games went. So we started off last week with CFP ranked number 21, 6-3 Arizona at 4-5 CU on Pac-12 Networks. Wildcats, the 10.5-point favorite. They'd win, but no cover. They needed a 10-0 fourth quarter rally for the win, hitting a field goal as time expired to avoid overtime in Boulder. A lot closer game than I think a lot of people expected, but they did get the win. Arizona continues to ride that hot streak. Next, Wazoo. May they cannot find the e-brake on this skid. Holy smokes. It just reminds me, if this is just like the first ice storm and Nissan Sentra's flying down Queen Anne Boulevard here in Seattle, there's no way to stop this thing. Wazoo cannot find the e-brake, man. Cal Bears were the 1-point favorite. We all liked it, and they won a shootout 42-39 in Berkeley. Cal returned two fumbles for touchdowns and just Wazoo cannot get out of its own way. Let's talk about this. This one was a little scary for a team that's rolling into Corvallis, but Stanford is a 21-point dog at Oregon State. Beavers all over Stanford, 62-17. Damian Martinez with four rushing touchdowns. If you're watching that in anticipation of heading down to Corvallis, that's a little tough one. This one may get Chip Kelly fired. Bruins, the 18-point favorite on the road. The Sun Devils, 17-7. The Sun Devils get the win. The Sun Devils were missing 14 players, including four offensive linemen. They tried everything. They run a freaking swinging gate combo with a flying wedge and somehow get the win. They just put everything out there. It looked like just flag football, turkey day, and they got the big win. Good for the Sun Devils. The late game, 7:30 on Fox. It was 7-3 USC at 8-1 Oregon. The Ducks win, but oh my goodness, no cover. What happened, Ducks? 36-27 Oregon. Caleb being Superman out there. I mean, wow. I've had so much fun, I'd say, watching this guy. The things that he does is just incredible, but it wasn't enough. That defense, I cannot believe that secondary and how much blown coverage guys, I'm getting beat long and just turning around and looking at their, you know, the corner, the safety. I thought you had him. It just amazes me. I cannot believe the level of ineptitude of that secondary. And really, I don't think it's a talent perspective. It's just preparedness, coaching, call it what you want. But my goodness, wow. Let's get into this week. Hey, how about Friday night? A little Friday night football, man. We got a game. It's 4-6 Colorado at 4-6 Wazoo. Wazoo, the 4.5-point favorite at home. See you. Already beat the 3.5 game over under on the beginning of the season, but they need this and a win at Utah to get bowl eligible. How say you, Law Dog? Wazoo, 4.5.
Mitch taking the Buffs, and I got to say, I'm with him here. I checked the weather forecast in Pullman. It's going to be with a high of about 51 that day. Mm-hmm. Clear skies for
that's
the most
buff weather.
And that's buff weather. I think Colorado, you know, they're going to give the blueprint, I think, for the Huskies, too, about how to carve up this Wazoo defense with a passing attack. And I'm taking the Buffs.
Yeah, I hate to say this. I want to make things a little interesting, but I can't do it. I thought the line would be much higher than this. Buffs, I think this is by at least a touchdown. Saturday, how about this heavyweight match? The pregame for ours on ABC, so 12:30, it's number 18, 7-3 Utah at 7-3, number 21 Arizona Wildcats, the one-point favorite in Tempe.
Wildcats, one-point favorite. Boy. I got to tell you, I was struggling to come up with this one because I feel like Utah is just a team that, you know, takes care of business in games like this. You know, this is going to be a big battle for basically for Arizona. I mean, they got to win out. And we should cover this a little bit. I mean, if they win out and then Cal loses another game and they end up in a two-way tie with Oregon, the Wildcats will win the tiebreaker, having not played Oregon. So they could end up in the Pac-12 championship game. They got a lot to play for here. I think it's coming to an end. I'm going with the Utes. It's essentially a pick'em here.
Yeah, this one's a pick'em, and so I'm going to take the home team. I'll take the other side of that. This thing could separate us a little bit, but I think Wild Arizona, I like what they're doing. Give me Arizona at home and a one-point favorite. I saw enough in that Utah game this last week. I think the Wildcats at home get them. How about this one, the battle for L.A.? So much history here. At 6-4, UCLA at 7-4, Southern California. Trojans, a seven-point favorite.
I'll say you. I'm going to go back to at the beginning of the season, I called out UCLA, and I said, you're comically overrated. And, you know, I knew that losing DTR was going to be a huge loss. They kind of – somewhere in there, they pulled out a game they shouldn't have. I think it was the Stanford game. But anyway, they just spanked somebody, and it was like, oh, UCLA's back. Mm-hmm. Every other game, it's been back down to earth. Their offense can't do anything. I'm sticking with their comically overrated. I can't believe the rumors about Chip Kelly. I mean, the fact that it's breaking with 2 weeks to go in the season, I think that's going to be – a distraction. I mean, especially if the AD doesn't come out and give some support to Chip Kelly, which he has not had all day to do, and he has not done. So I'm taking the Trojans. Mitch is also on the Trojans for the victory bell, BT.
Woo! Yeah, this one's tough. I'd love to make it interesting again, but I just don't see this particular at home. I think the Trojans, particularly when they have so much to play for, this is a rivalry that I think is even probably more, for whatever reason, more important to SC than it is for UCLA. They don't like losing to UCLA, and I think they get this one. Seven is, I wish it was six, but I'll take the Trojans on that for, you know, a 9-10. I think they pull this thing away. I've seen enough. I think Caleb Williams wants to go out big. And they don't play the week after. This is the one. How about 1 p.m. on Fox? It's number 6 Oregon at 3-7 ASU. The Ducks, a 23.5 point favorite in Tempe.
Yeah, and I mean, Kenny Dillingham, their old ball coach, you know, coaching for Oregon last year at home. The Ducks, obviously, they've looked pretty good. They came back down to earth a little bit against SC. They always have a November slip up. I'm not calling for the Sun Devils to win this game, but I am going to take them with the points at home. 23 or 24.5 is a lot.
Yeah, you see this thing by like a 2-touchdown, 3-touchdown game. Yeah, this one is a little interesting. I worry a little bit that ASU threw everything out that it had. Every trick play in the book last week, and there's just too much tape on whatever kind of crap that they have going.
Well, that's also going to be Oregon's, downfall, working on all that stuff all week, practicing swing gate coverage.
It really could be. But, I mean, they got this crazy stuff where, you know, you got Cam Scadamo out there, as quarterback running things. And this is a tough one. The Oregon has had their issues within in the desert as well. This one is a little bit too much for me. I was hoping it was going to be 18, 19, maybe 20, but that meant 23. I still think this is, Ducks are going to win this thing by 18, 20, 21, whatever. But I'll take the Sun Devils to cover on this one as well. Last one, big game. How about 4-6 Cal at 3-7 Stanford on Pac-12? It's Cal, the 6.5 point favorite at home. I'm going to call my shot right now and make you go after me. I've seen enough Cal offense and Stanford inability to shut them down. This one always, you know, the greatest stare down in the history of college football. Give me Cal, 7 by 7. Give me Cal maybe by 9, but I like that 6.5 points. I'll take Cal on that.
The Golden Bears, baby. Mitch also has the Bears. You know what? I'll take the men of Stanford, BT. Let's take the other side of that.
Great. Taking the future freaking fleece vest wearing venture capitalists who are just all over. Okay. All right, Law Dog. I hear what you're doing. Well, hey, look, we're going to see how this thing separates over the next couple weeks, but that's a great slate of games on Saturday. All eyes, if you're not traveling down to Corvallis, you're going to be glued to a TV at some point. And the great, 7:30 East Coast kickoff, a lot of eyes are going to be on this. This is a chance where I actually was really excited when I saw that Oregon State was favored. And I know the team knows about this. And I know the team just loves it. And this is just going to burn. Like, we get no respect. Okay, fine. This is our time to put it on you and show the nation what we can do. And this is a great, great week to do it. And then get ready for the Apple Cup the following week. I think this is going to be awesome. Last thing we got to talk about. We talked about the CFP. We talked about this week in Pac-12 football. Last thing we talk about it. How about a little something that's happened in wine country with a little judge in the Pac-12? I mean, my goodness. Educate me.
Here's a little legal update for all our listeners there on the Pac-12, the Pac-2 versus the Pac-10 litigation, right? The hearing was held today regarding the temporary injunction to prevent the outgoing 10 members of the Pac-12 from being on the executive board with Oregon State and Washington State. There's no other way to put it. The Cougs and Beavs, especially the Cougs may be floundering on the field, but they won in the courtroom today. They got that injunction. Although I have to say, from what I've heard, and if you want a full-time attorney covering, these proceedings, BT, I'm going to have to send you my hourly rates. But I was able to just gather from some news reports that the judge in the case said that he was granting the injunction, but the outgoing 10 members needed to be, quote, treated fairly. And I think that is, if I was the Oregon State, Washington State attorneys after that hearing today, going back and explaining to university presidents and my clients what that means, I would say, you know what? That's a pretty big loophole that he left there. And I would bet that these parties will be back in court fighting about what that means. So, for example, if Wazoo and Oregon State vote to, we're going to suspend all the other 10 teams from participating in the Pac-12 championship game beginning, say, tomorrow and this season. And we're going to, Oregon State is our representative in the Pac-12 championship game. They're going to play Washington State. I would say the judge would probably most likely to come back and say, you know what, that's not treating the other 10 members fairly, right? But if it comes to, hey, we're going to keep those NCAA tournament units that UCLA and Oregon and Arizona are leaving behind for their new conferences, and we're going to divide that up amongst ourselves, I think that judge would probably come back and say, you know what, I think that's pretty fair. You knew you were walking away from this, right? The question is, where's the rubber hit the road with that fair treatment language? And what is – how far can Wazoo and Oregon State push the envelope? And I think, what we've been talking about, the NCAA tournament money is kind of a big chunk, but then it's this college football playoff money that's really next year under the contract beginning next year, where all the other outgoing 10 members will be gone and Wazoo and Oregon State are entitled, potentially to a couple $100 million. And having not really, let's face it, earned any of that money in the college football playoff. So I think that is really going to be the test. And I think Oregon State and Washington State's attorneys, I'd want to take that and say, that's our money. You're leaving it behind. That's real money, though, to these colleges. I don't think they're going to go away. And UW has already indicated a willingness with the other 9 schools signing on to their statement that they put out publicly that they're going to be appealing this to Washington Supreme Court. So we definitely have not heard the last of this one, but just wanted to update everybody that seems to be the first round definitely going to the Pac-2. And now we're going to see you in Olympia, which is a little bit of a different venue.
Part of me would laugh if they were just like, we mandate the Pac-12 championship, Oregon State and Wazoo.
Well, it's, they have the power to do that as the executive board right now. And that's under the injunction that was granted today. And UW's attorney, who was at the hearing, apparently asked the judge to stay his ruling for a week to allow him to appeal. to allow the university to appeal. And so, yeah, I mean, that's something that if Oregon State, Washington State wanted to jam that down the throat of the other 10 members, you know, tonight in an executive session, they probably could do that.
Oh, my God. It's just amazing. I mean, incredible. We haven't seen the end of this. This is going to continue on, particularly for the two conferences. I mean, like, they can play out the season. Next year is going to get really interesting, and we're going to blink, and next year is going to be around. And you've got what the heck happens to Wazoo and Oregon State.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we are not, you know, the moral center of this argument is with Oregon State and Washington State, right? They're the ones who are getting screwed over. They should definitely be entitled to some compensation for that. But I also really blame, you know, it's like, it's the same thing. It's blaming the commissioner and the university presidents for all these years. Why do they not have any exit fees? Why do they not have any, you know, assurances in these contracts? And the answer is because they were all just arrogant and they thought no one's ever going to leave the Pac-12, right? We're the best.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And, you know, it's like a little bit of foresight might've helped you in this situation. And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. You know, it's, that's a lot to ask. That's a lot to ask for the Beavs and the Cougs, but hey, let's settle some stuff on the field this week. How about that? Huh?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder how much this gets into the players' minds, you know, in the locker room and all that. I'm sure the coaches want to downplay it and minimize as much as possible. The players have to be like listening and going, what? They like won in court. Now it's like they're, you know.
All right. So when they settle it down on the court, we're going to settle it down on the field in Corvallis. Big one this week against a top 12 team. Huskies coming in, the underdog. This is the week to prove the doubters wrong. We got this one. Can I get a go, Dogs?
Yeah, go, Dogs.
Let's get them.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.